Hi, everybody. I'm Billy, and this is Antioch, Chapter 23, Death and Taxes. Captain and Jacob met during the incinerator's construction. They became good friends during the founding of the Bells. Demand for their expertise had them meeting frequently to do science, as Jacob had become fond of saying. One afternoon, after having done science all morning, they sat against the wall of the church, pooling their thoughts. Captain held the smoke in his lungs.
I like burning things and explosions and plants. I like plants.
Jacob nodded.
I like food and women. Captain exhaled. Uncommonly common claims to make, Jake. Everybody likes them.
Jacob giggled, said, I know, and inhaled from the pipe.
Oh, okay then. I like cider.
Fwah, that's a good one. I like Rachel.
Who's that?
A woman.
You've already said women.
They laughed at each other, hunching over and shaking their heads. Captain slapped his knee and pressed on.
I'll take money, then. Money's like the score in a contest, except you buy things with it.
He paused, seemingly on the precipice of a great discovery.
And the contest is life.
Jacob offered him the pipe. I like smoking. They hissed and snorted like little boys. Michael, having heard them through the wall, came around the corner, frowning, wearing his long handles under the tabard again, looking like he was about to tell them that Armageddon had no place for sitting or laughing or pipe smoking. He said,
Forgive me for intruding. I'm curious about how my sleeve is coming along. He managed to mean the other as well.
Jacob blew smoke and nodded. Today. Then he pointed at Captain.
He's distracting me.
Captain said,
Back in your jammies, Michael.
Michael's eyes narrowed.
Jammies?
A snort of laughter slipped out of Captain.
Jam jams.
I see. Well, when you can, Jacob. Thank you.
The blacksmith got up with a laugh, said, Of course, sir, and went back to work. Michael looked down at Captain.
What about that thing you've been working on?
Jacob's told me about it. Your exploder. Captain snickered at the term.
The design's in its infancy, but growing like a weed.
Ah, very good. I've been thinking we could use something like that at the wall. Michael linked his hands behind his back. As soon as possible. He stood there, expecting Captain to hop to it, like Jacob had. Captain reclined, making it clear that wasn't going to happen. Michael frowned at him again, said,
Carry on, then, and walked away.
Captain waited for him to be gone. Then he strolled over to the forge, where Jacob was using a special pair of pliers to twist and pinch around a rip in Michael's mail. Captain tapped himself on the nose and watched.
Jake, who pays you to do what you do?
Jacob smiled. I don't get paid for this. It's an honor.
The smith's nimble wrists and fingers were the only sober parts of him. They moved in tight patterns over the damage and made slow, consistent progress. Captain imagined that if time sped up, the torn chain would pull together like a zipper. Jacob rambled while he worked.
My family's always been smiths for the church. Right now, I'm the one. It's me. I can walk into any of these shops, hey? And they'll say, There's Jacob, the armorer.
He nodded with pride.
You must feel something of the same. Sailors are the cow's teats around town.
And you're a big cheese!
His face clenched up as though he'd pinched himself with the pliers, and an infectious giggle squealed out of him. Captain couldn't help joining in and had to lean against a post to recover.
Whee! A big cheese!
Aye, indeed. We're all well loved. Does that get you anything for free?
Fwa! No!
Well, sometimes.
They shared another laugh, and Jacob went on.
My brothers and my father have the town smithy for making money. They'll take care of me while I'm the one. When one of them is ready to serve the church, I'll take care of him.
I don't mind selling hammers and nails.
So nothing's changed for you. The circle's gone, you know. It's only Michael in there now.
Jacob prickled some.
Oh, only Michael in there, is it? Let me tell you something, hey. If it came to it, your life or your loves, you'd offer Michael everything you own. And do you know he wouldn't take it? He wouldn't even ask for thanks.
While there's a man like that in it, I'll serve the church.
Captain looked as though he'd smelled a fart.
Why? That's okay, fine, but I'm a bit bothered by what they've done myself.
He pointed at himself. I'm mad.
You should be, too. So should everyone be. They've duped us. They've held part of us hostage in their little clubhouse, hiding it from us like...
The stream of frustration that poured out of him then wasn't something Captain often shared. They think they can just pop back in every few decades and make you good as new, and that makes everything all right. But nobody understands that, do they? Nobody knows what's happened to you when it happens, and they want the truth, or they think you're a warlock. So you have to run away and start all over again in some new place with new people who don't know your face and don't have a torch or a pitchfork. Better just to stay away from them all, because it's easier than the other. Easier than living. You'd think you could say no, wouldn't you? But you can't. You can't say no to a god. And he never lifts you up more than a head taller than the crowd. And that's only so you can do for him better. Jacob didn't know what he'd just heard. Is it like that? It certainly hadn't been about Michael or the church. But, seeing his friends so put out, Jacob offered the best advice he could. Maybe I could be mad about something. What good would it do? Michael's doing all he can, and that's what I'll do too. He nodded some encouragement at Captain, and went back to mending the sleeve. Jacob started talking about something else, but Captain's thoughts went adrift behind a pout. Who does Michael think he is, anyway? A circle. Humph. A circle of children playing ring around the secret. Secret notes and secret languages for secret civilizations across the ocean.
Kafferways, Lama!
Hey? Oh, sorry, Jake. Go on about that. Captain submerged into contemplation again. He'd been marooned, and it confounded him why Ezekiel had bothered to do it.
Zeke.
He supposed the reasons didn't matter. He doubted from the day they'd set sail that Ezekiel would find enough people after the Grace, even to man another ship. He's marooned himself as well, for an eternity in the wasteland. The thought settled on him. Michael didn't have a candle of Ezekiel's power. Eternity, for Captain, meant death. If Antioch somehow survived the army of Bauron fermenting in the south, he guessed he might have another 60 or 70 years of natural life, at most. He was finally among the people with whom he would age and die. Captain smiled. He'd grown fond of them and their simple ways already. Dying had started to seem like something that was supposed to happen. Jacob had been rambling on. Because he's never had a penny, despite being the deacon's son. It'd be nice if he could go a day without ripping his damn sleeve, but I've nothing really to complain about. Other than the end of the world, hey? Jacob smiled, too. Captain clapped him on the shoulder.
Jakers, you're priceless. Even I couldn't afford you.
Shop's doing well, is it?
Aye, indeed, but I'm coming out of the past. Here, let me show you something about wealth.
He pulled a golden ring from his pinky finger and handed it over.
Oversee, that's worth more than the Grace.
Jacob examined it skeptically.
This little thing. Against your ship. The one that carried you all across the water. Go on.
He wondered what other tall tales glittered and dangled in Captain's outfit, a fashionable and bejeweled variation of traditional brown and whites.
Captain said, It's true. The value's in its history. Before I got it, that ring had been passed down through generations of royalty, dynasties. Men have killed each other for that. I've even seen some afraid to pick it up, believing it to be cursed.
Jacob handed it right back.
Oh, well, how'd you come by it?
Captain waved the particulars aside. Bought it as part of a collection. No one here could possibly comprehend the kind of wealth I've commanded. Riches, indeed. I've abandoned troves of such baubles as this. None of it'll ever have value again. Not in the span of a man's life, anyway. Without its history, here, this cursed thing is just a harmless circle of gold. I might could trade better with a box of lucifers, to be true.
Jacob nodded. Fire and a stick. I'd go for them first in a deal myself.
Aye. That's because a matchstick's values and what it does. It does something. Captain held the ring up to his face and stared through its hollow, having another moment of pipe-induced clarity.
This doesn't do anything.
Jacob said,
You know, you're right. Look at it. It isn't doing anything at all.
They both burst into giggles again, and Captain slipped the ring back onto his pinky. The wall inched its way around to the north. Captain had never seen it, having been preoccupied until then with more centralized affairs. But, A seed of worry grew in him that he could no longer ignore. It had him following second-hand directions through empty streets on his own, his rifle and a rolled-up schematic in hand. When he reached the construction site outside of town, the massive stone barrier came as a surprise. It was too big, well more than enough to hold back any number of Bowron. It was a true fortification, a military wall. The mason saw him coming and called out,
"Look here, it's Captain. He's come to give us a break.
Bring your pipe, old boy."
Captain met them, smiling, relieved by the company.
"No, not out here, lads. I'll want my wits if I'm to sit in your crow's nest." One said, "Fwa!"
Another swayed back with his hands out and made an appeal to common decency.
"Yeah, come on, man. Fwa!"
It was an unmistakable impersonation of Ditch. Captain laughed.
"Why, fwa to you, then?"
The masons laughed, too. They all exchanged a few more local curses and called each other dumber than Gunders. Biggs looked down over the edge of the scaffold.
"Hey, Cap, what's going on?"
Captain waved.
"Biggs, I'm coming up."
"All right."
The scaffold wasn't as firm as Captain would have liked. It creaked and bent with his weight and in the breeze. Biggs held out a hand to help at the top, and that turned into a friendly embrace once Captain was aboard. Biggs said,
"Glad to have you, partner."
Captain was about to say something of the same, but the view stole his attention away. 20 feet off the ground, he saw fields and trees for miles, the church in the city center over an alley of lower rooftops, and a length of the dirt road to the north that spoke of their community's isolation. It was a panoramic touch of being on the open ocean. Captain became nostalgic. "The cauldron took me back to the deckhouse, but this takes me back to the deck, to be true." The Grace had been dear to him.
"Sure does."
Biggs smirked.
"Heard you like that chicken."
Captain's eyes rolled.
"That's only funny to you."
Biggs chuckled and pointed at the schematic.
"What you got there?"
Captain unrolled it and held it up so they could both see.
"Jacobs named it the Exploder.
Intricate mechanical drawings of a broad-barreled gun and bombshells accompanied notes about propellant densities, regional materials, and explosive velocities. Biggs said,
"Dadgum, Cap. What's that, some kind of mortar?"
"Something like that. Now that I've access to a forge and a competent smith, I can make us a useful weapon against groups of Bowron. However, I'm starting to wonder whether I should."
"What do you mean?"
"Michael mentioned something the other day that's got me thinking. You've not had many Bowron this way, have you?"
"Not a one. Right now, they're only coming out the south. Michael's catching him some on the Big Bell now and then. Don't know how long it's going to stay that way."
Nothing from the north.
"Circle's plan's got a hole in it, for sure. Hoping the smoke won't make it up there on its own. Shoot. Just that and the wind would have wiped this place out a long time ago. First one to come out the north's going to be a heartbreaker, Cap. A lot of folks up there. Way more than here. King and castle and whatnot. Hope's all we got for 'em."
"So it seems." Captain lowered his voice. "This wall's a bit sturdier than what we'd need for Bowron, don't you think? Looks strong enough for a siege."
"Yup, and there's a reason. King's got this law against fortification. Anything good enough to stop the Bowron's going to be against the law. So, Michael wants a wall good enough to stop the law, too."
Captain lowered the schematic. "Unbelievable. We're to be involved in a revolt as well."
"Suppose so, if the king finds out. North don't come down this way much. I want to get the wall done for any of that. When it's up, Michael figures one of us with a boss going to be a lot nastier than a whole bunch of the king's boys."
"Despicable." Big shrugged.
"Kind of ticked me off, too, when you told me that, but what choice we got? No matter what comes out the north now, soldiers, Bowron, going to be a mess either way."
"There's more to it than that, Biggs. No one's to leave town, according to Michael's orders. We're locked down."
"Well, yeah, who'd want to leave town anyhow?"
Captain rolled up the schematic.
"Aye, indeed. We wouldn't want to send out a word or a warning, now would we?"
Biggs leaned on the railing and looked away. Captain said, "It wouldn't matter if anyone outside of town knew about the milk, of course. The smoke took its toll on us in spite of that the whole way here. The truth is, if they knew about any of this, well enough to protect themselves, they'd just start coming, wouldn't they? In droves."
"Suppose so." "There are only a few small spheres now in which nature allows human life to exist, like ships on the ocean. Michael's at the helm of ours. He means to keep it from sinking under the weight of its crew."
"Well, what do you want him to do? Had to pick somewhere. Picked his own kin.
I'd have done that too.
Captain gestured with the schematic. But could you fire one of these at men after what we've been through?
Depends. Ain't some killer cat, but the right side of this for us with the Beaners. They're the ones took us in.
The situation made Captain's stomach turn. He didn't know how far he could go in designing weapons for the city's defense, if those designs might be used on people. He'd sworn never to take part in a war again. At the same time, Antioch was remote, and the land around it was undeveloped. They wouldn't have enough room or food to provide for a very steep increase in population. If too many people surrounded Michael, everyone would starve. Captain sighed. He preferred botany to ballistics. Survival's a murderous business.
Yep. They shared some silence. Then Captain said,
Ditch told me this is how you've been spending all of your days.
Pretty much.
When you make yourself useful, you get nothing but used, to be true.
Biggs raised an eyebrow at him. That right?
Captain smiled it away as a joke. It's a thoughtful place to sit, though, isn't it? Perhaps a turn or two of this would do me some good. Would you care to have me fill in for you from time to time?
Sure, all right.
It wouldn't make me sheriff, of course. More of a captain of the guard. He hadn't wanted the responsibility, and would have refused it, but it bothered him a little that Michael hadn't asked. Biggs chuckled.
Wouldn't call myself much of a sheriff. Just set up here a lot. Ditch and Wells and them other boys come by now and again, let me know what's going on. They're the ones doing all the work.
What would you call yourself, then? Michael's made you the highest authority in town, next to himself.
Ain't given much thought, to tell the truth. Sure don't feel like a authority, way old Beefer's on me.
Captain spent a few seconds trying to decipher that.
What do you mean?
Big's eyes widened, and he exhaled a little frustration.
Guess that ain't got round to you yet. Lying about being married to Lynn's got old Beefer in a tizzy. Says we're living in sin.
He wiggled his fingers and rolled his eyes.
There's some talk around town about us getting shunned.
Pshaw, who'd go along with that?
Don't know. Turns out marriage is right significant round here.
They shared a chuckle, and Biggs went on to the part of it that bothered him.
Getting out of his inn sure wasn't good enough for him. Now it's hurting Fergus and Margaret just to have us there. Not that they'd complain. Fine people.
Biggs, Bethford wouldn't dare. The both of you are too important. The Fellowship would no sooner turn their backs on you than they would on Michael. Biggs cocked his jaw to one side.
Guess you don't know about that, neither.
They've shunned Michael? No, I was just there. Jacob didn't say anything.
Nah, it's an old mess. 30 years. But kind of tells you something, don't it? He's just a kid at the time. Beefer shunned his own son, and the whole town went along with it.
Why?
Lynn said it's on account of some fundamental difference in beliefs. Beefer brought it down on him hard, thinking he'd been. Never did. Split the two of them like a cedar in a storm.
That's a fool's shame to bear.
Suppose. But what now with us? Shoot. Ain't enough else going on? Old Beefer's on edge and making trouble just to make it, if you ask me. Everybody's scared. He ain't the weight round here no more. And ain't gonna run without Moreau.
Biggs paused. Captain became nervous, thinking Biggs had spotted a Bowron.
What? What is it? Just thought of something. Can't believe I didn't put it together before. Ditch said Beefer's been talking about the town's taxes. Can't nobody take him north on account of the lockdown.
The meaning of that passed between them. Captain swatted his rolled-up schematic in hand. And so it follows, certain as death, that we're to be expecting a visit from a tax collector.
Gotta know one's coming for sure. Gets one look at the wall, gonna blow the lid off early's what he's gonna do.
Biggs scratched his head.
Can of worms.
Captain stuffed his design into his coat and brought out his pipe.
I'd meant to keep a clear head today, but a puff or two should give me some ease.
Biggs leaned back, amused by Captain's method of dealing with crises. He'd seen the pipe come out like that many times before, in addition to the regularity with which it normally came out. Biggs didn't care for it himself, but didn't mind others the indulgence. The masons smelled it and started whispering.
They're having a smoke.
Keeping it all to themselves. Fwah! Selfish sailors.
Captain puffed and nodded. He'd have paced as well, given a larger platform. Eventually, he said,
When the inevitable taxman comes, we'll welcome him in with a fine meal at the cauldron, and enough cider to make a difference.
He offered the pipe. Biggs smiled, motioning a refusal, and Captain went on. There we'll explain the dire circumstances facing the world today, in compelling fashion, and invite him to start a new life here. What do you say to that, Sheriff?
That's all we gotta do, huh?
Captain shrugged and took in the view. Why not?
Biggs engaged the proposition.
Say Taxman raises a fuss. Gotta figure he's a stinker, right? I mean, come on, boy's a taxman.
Captain acknowledged the possibility with an expression of interest, as though it was an overlooked variable within a mathematical theorem. Biggs continued.
So this one's a nasty piece of work, and all he wants to do is run on home and tell the boss on us. What then?
Incarcerate him.
Ain't even got us a jailhouse, Cap.
Shoot.
What if there's more than one? Some gonna keep coming for that money anyhow.
I believe there's a decent way around anything if you care to look for it.
Decent. Not blasting people to bits with bombs.
Biggs kicked at the platform.
All right, I hear what you're saying. Could try slipping him a little extra, keep his mouth shut about the wall, just not mention the other. But maybe your way's a little nicer.
We'll never know until we know. Our hypothetical taxman might have a family he'd never dream of leaving behind.
Biggs shifted and withdrew.
Something to think on.
Reckon a little good come out of a visit anyhow. I mean all them folks up there is all right.
Aye, indeed. They shared the view, but not their thoughts. Then Biggs changed the subject.
Thinking about making it official with Lynn. Get some of that other mess out the way.
Captain grinned in a wreath of smoke.
A wedding?
Well, yeah, you know, just for looks. Smooth things over with Beefer and the Beaners.
The grin got bigger. She's agreed to it.
Ain't asked her yet. Figure she'll up and say no, on account of her face.
Biggs wagged his hand at his own face, as if that didn't make a difference. They considered what had happened to her. Then Captain said,
And you don't care about that.
Shoot, no. Lynn's got a good butt.
Captain sneezed out a burst of smoke and laughter.
Ain't told nobody yet, except you and Ditch. What do you think?
Captain nodded like an old hand at love and exhaled a curling plume.
The romance. How have you planned on going about it?
Say again?
How are you going to ask her? You've got to bait your hook, lad, if you want to catch a fish.
Biggs hadn't considered how to do it, only if he should.
Don't know. Maybe cuss at her and spit? Think that'll work?
They chuckled. Have you got a ring?
Well, no. Whole thing's just for looks, anyhow.
Aye, and at the same time you're afraid she'll refuse, even if it is just for looks. In fact, especially so for that. Make it look good.
Captain removed the ring from his pinky and offered it.
Here, give her this.
Biggs took it and looked it over, ignorant of its value.
Sure is a pretty little thing. You know, that's real nice, Cap. Thanks.
He flicked the ancient seal spinning into the air, snatched it sideways, and then stuffed it into his pocket. Captain's eyes went wide at that handling of it. Then, with a smile that went much deeper than it showed, he clapped Biggs on the shoulder.
May it make her yours forever.
I'm curious. What was Deputy Ditch's advice to you on the matter?
Said I was being a wuss and just do it.
Captain laughed.
Why?
Indeed. Biggs, now that it's on my mind, you really are a great wuss. She's always had an eye for you.
Biggs grinned, and then frowned, wondering if that had been an eye joke. Captain smoked some more and then said,
Show me what to do up here. Not that I'll be doing it today, of course. I've been impaired and shouldn't be responsible for the welfare of others.
He winked with the pipe in his teeth and tapped himself on the nose.
All right. Ain't much to it, really. Keep a lookout. If you see something, get these boys scooting on over to the church first to be safe. Then give old Tinkerbell here a shake.
Biggs directed Captain's attention to the scaffold signal bell. It was identical to the one at the church, though a third of the size.
That way Michael's sure to get tell. When he does, he'll let out a clunk-a-clunk on the big one to let you know he's coming with the truck.
Captain hadn't seen any of the smaller bells in more than a month, not since their founding.
Tinkerbell. That's precious. She's loud enough.
Shoot, little old bell's louder than Lynn. Gotta keep her up here now, though, and don't let nobody mess with her. See, these Beaners just love fooling with the bells, but Michael, well, he hates that.
That is the end of chapter 23. If you enjoyed this podcast, you can follow the link at the top of my website, www.williameharlan.com, and purchase the full novel from Amazon in ebook format for $2.99 or as a paperback for $12.99. Thanks for listening. Tune in next week for chapter 24, All the King's Men.